Welcome to the Side Hustle Project, a podcast where we explore the nitty-gritty details behind what it takes to start and grow a profitable side hustle. I'm your host, Ryan Robinson, and in this podcast, I'm bringing you interviews with entrepreneurs, best-selling authors, CEOs, investors, and people just like you who are building and profiting from interesting side hustles. In today's episode, we're talking to Rob Palmer, a serial entrepreneur, blogger, and one of the world's first digital nomads who's been traveling and working remotely for over 25 years, both as a freelancer and in his own companies. Originally from the UK, Rob grew up before the advent of the internet, but he always had an affinity for reading and writing, though his family and teachers pushed him towards more steady careers like becoming an engineer. And it was during his studies at the age of 18 that Rob was out sailing with a few of his friends on what would become a very fateful afternoon. Their boat capsized and the boys were all dumped into the water. Out of sheer luck, a fishing boat happened to spot them treading in the water before too long and rescued them before they drowned. This moment served as a sort of wake-up call for Rob. He started to spend more time on his writing and began leaving his engineering schoolwork behind. In this episode, Rob and I talk about how he launched a freelance copywriting career on the side of his studies, working for massive tech-forward brands like Apple, Microsoft, IBM to help them launch magazine articles, advertising campaigns, and create early blog content back in the 1990s. We explore a very compelling case for why Rob may just be the world's first blogger, having published online content for a client back in 1993, months before other dates claiming to be the first blog post. We dive into the multiple online businesses Rob has grown over the years, including affiliate marketing websites, a stable of luxury vacation homes in Australia, and digital marketing consulting. As always, you can find everything we mentioned in today's episode in the show notes at ryrob.com/podcast. That's spelled ryrob.com/podcast. Let's get into today's interview with Rob Palmer. Rob, welcome to the show.
Hey, Ryan, it's so good to be here on my favorite podcast. I've been really looking forward to doing this.
Well, I'm honored for getting that title in your book. And you know, by your own account, you're one of, if not the world's first digital nomad, or at least, you know, the first to identify with that title, right? You've been traveling the world for over 25 years while working as a freelancer within your own businesses. And before we really dig into all of that, Rob, where are you originally from?
So originally from the UK, and emigrated to Australia in 2001, thanks to having an online business, allowed me to do that. And now I'm based in Thailand, but basically travel the world.
Wow, not so bad.
So it's good life, I'm enjoying it, yeah.
So you said you're originally from the UK. You know, going back into kind of the early days, who was Rob growing up? Can you kind of like set the stage for what your childhood was like? What kind of like set you down this path of being interested in what I'm assuming at the time was kind of like really early internet?
No, actually, this was when I was young. It was long before the internet. So when I was a child, I was always interested in writing. When I was quite young, I wanted to be a writer or something creative of that sort. I was really interested in books. I loved writing stories and all that kind of thing. But when I go into my teens, the kind of teachers in my life and other people will tell me, well, there's no real future in writing. It's not really a proper career. You need to do something sensible like become an engineer. There's always a need for engineers. Good, safe job. And in those days, it was all about getting a good, steady job that will see you through until retirement. So I actually started studying to be an engineer, but my heart wasn't in it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And I was struggling because I just wasn't really committed to doing it. But all that changed one day when I was about 18 years old. I went out on a boating trip with a couple of my friends, and we took a little boat way out to sea. We're a bit irresponsible. We took it way too far out to sea. And to cut a long story short, the boat sank. And the three of us ended up in the water, and we were struggling, and it looked like we were about to go under. We were going to drown, and that was going to be the end of it, everything. And at the very last moment, a bigger fishing boat came past and saw all the commotion and came along and literally plucked us out of the water just before we drowned. So half an hour later, I found myself sitting on the beach thinking about what had just happened. And I thought it was all over. I thought that was the end of my life. But now here I am I've got my whole future still stretching out ahead of me. So what am I going to do? Am I going to waste it trying to be an engineer when that's not what I really want to do? Or am I just going to go with what feels good? So I decided at that moment, okay, forget the engineering. I'm going to be a writer. And that kind of set me forward on the road I've been following ever since.
Wow. That is a crazy event. I mean, nothing can reset your priorities, right? Like something showing you how limited life can be.
Yeah, especially at that young age, you kind of think you're going to live forever. So that was a real kind of reminder that, you know, that you only get a limited amount of time and you don't know how long it's going to be. And it really made me think, well, I'm going to make the most of it. I'm going to do something I love and not something that just pays the bills.
Man, well, that's cool. I'm glad it really set you down towards what would kind of become your calling. So I know you eventually started getting to work with clients like Apple, Microsoft, IBM, like this really kind of long list of very recognizable kind of tech-focused companies. What year was this when you started sort of deciding like, okay, I'm going to be this writer?
So this was the early 80s when I was in my early 20s. And so what happened was I was still doing my engineering studying, but I was trying to build up what was my first side hustle. I was trying to get some writing gigs on the side. I needed to kind of prove that I could make some money before I could quit the whole studying engineering thing. So I started picking up some of these side jobs and they gradually grew bigger and bigger. And I was able to say, okay, this is it. Yeah, I can make it as a writer. And off I went. And I joined some of the big ad agencies and moved to London and worked with some big companies there. And then eventually went freelance again and did a lot of work with big corporates back in the 90s, like say with IBM, Apple, Microsoft. Very, very interesting companies to work with, but a little bit crazy as well.
What kind of projects were you taking on back in those days? Because I know this is kind of before the time where, you know, companies are blogging or even, you know, convinced that blogging is worthwhile. So was it more like magazine articles, press?
It was a kind of a mix of different things. For example, for Apple, I did a direct mail project. That was quite a fun project. That turned out to be the project that was so successful, they had to close it down. The lawyers closed it down. at that time, Apple was doing all their business through dealers. There were no Apple stores. Everything went through the dealers. And somebody at Apple UK thought it'd be a really good idea to cut out the middleman and sell direct to the public. So they decided to do this direct mail program, and they brought me in as the copywriter to write all the copy for that. And it was hugely successful. Like we launched the first in January 1994, we launched the first one that was really successful. So the next month, they broadened it out to three catalogs for business and education and consumer, and they were even more successful. And they were running out of stock. They had to fly stock in from Germany by air freight to fulfill the orders. Everything was going great until they got the backlash from the dealers because all this business was sucking all the money away from the dealers. All the dealers were sitting in empty showrooms selling nothing, and Apple was selling all the product direct. So the lawyers took, the dealers' lawyers took Apple to court or started legal proceedings, and in the end, Apple backed down, and we had to close it down. So it was too successful for its own good.
Wow. It's crazy to think about a company being too successful with its own direct-to-consumer business that they were forced to stop selling that way. That's insane. Today.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And I remember this was early in 94. We had one of the meetings. There was, those days, everything was sent by motorcycle messenger. And all the copy and artwork and everything went back and forth by motorcycle messenger. One day, the messenger guys went on strike. So we had a big meeting to decide, well, what are we going to do now? We can't send things backwards and forwards. And there was one geeky guy in the meeting, and he said, well, we could send it over the internet. And we had the senior executives from Apple UK, and they all said, what's the internet? So early in 94, nobody in Apple even knew what the internet was.
So, you know, speaking of this time, 1993, 1994, I know you really, that was kind of when you started blogging, right?
So another of my clients was BT, which is the equivalent of AT&T in the UK. It's the biggest telecom provider, the old national carrier. They have big research laboratories east of London, and I used to do work for them producing a quarterly publication which talked about all the research projects they had going on. And so one day in 1993, I went up there, and the guys were really excited because it had just been announced that the technology behind the World Wide Web was going open source. It was going to be free to use forever. And they could see a lot of potential in this, and they said, okay, we're going to take our journal, and we're going to put it online. It's going to be an online journal. So what we'd now call a blog, but that term hadn't yet been invented. So this is June 1994. We put what may well be the world's first blog online. It was very simple. It was all plain text, no graphics, and not even bold or italics or anything like that. It was just plain slabs of text, but we were able to update it with articles every week. And it was very successful at communicating with the research community, because they were the only people online in those days. That's the internet was just for academics and researchers. But it was a really good way of spreading their ideas and making contacts. And it just showed there was a lot of potential for this strange internet thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Very different times. So I know, Rob, at some point you kind of make this transition from being more of a hired gun freelance writer over to running your own online business. When did that sort of bridging that gap happen for you? What year was that?
Yeah, so that was happening through the kind of mid to late 90s, kind of step by step. I was really interested in this whole kind of internet technology, and I could see that it had potential for business. So I started getting involved, and I set up my first website, which is extremely plain and primitive, but it actually got me some good clients. So as soon as I got my first client, I knew then, okay, this has definitely got commercial potential. And then when the first affiliate programs came along, I started doing some affiliate marketing. All very primitive in those days, but I made some money. I could see that this was going places, and that after a while, that grew into a membership-based site and became a full-time business, full-time online business.
What was your membership site about? What were you kind of teaching or working with people to do?
So it's originally because I was a freelancer myself. It was really how to become a freelancer, really. So it was all about starting a career as a freelancer and all the information you need to know.
Wow. I love it. You may have been one of the very early people doing something like that too.
Yeah. It was all very pioneering in those days. It was interesting because we didn't know anything. I find it strange now that you can go to like the internet marketing forums and people are always complaining, oh, internet marketing is too hard now. It was better back in the day. It was better. Nowadays, SEO is dead. Facebook ads are too expensive. Social media market doesn't work anymore. It was all better 5 years ago, 10 years ago, but it absolutely was not. Now it's so much better. Now you have so much information, YouTube videos and blogs and courses and everything else, plus all these fantastic tools to help you with like SEO and social media and everything else. It's so much easier because back in those days, we were just working in the dark. We were guessing at everything. We didn't really know what we were doing.
That's fascinating. So how large did your kind of affiliate membership business grow at that time?
Yeah, it grew into kind of a seven-figure business over, not straight away, but over several years. It grew into, by that time, we'd emigrated to Australia. And then for a while, I had an office there with a team of employees and became quite a big business.
Wow. What happened to that business?
It actually went on quite well. The business itself was going okay. What didn't go well was... because I was making good money at that time, I was investing. I thought it'd be a good idea to get the money out of the internet, which I thought was a bit shaky. You never know what's going to happen. And I'll put it in something solid, like real estate. It seemed like a really good idea in the early 2000s. Until we got to 2008, when we had the global financial crisis. Wow. And America sneezed and Australia caught a cold. And my money was in vacation rental properties. And as soon as the crisis hit, people stopped going on vacations, so the rental income stopped. And property prices dropped, so we couldn't sell them. So what happened was that all this real estate debacle kind of dragged down the whole of kind of income strategy. So it kept for a while. It fell apart in 2008, and I had to go back to the drawing board and rebuild from zero.
Did you go back to freelance writing? Was that kind of your staple in those days?
Yeah, certainly copywriting. That's one of the great things about copywriting. That if it's a skill that once you have it, you can do that. You can always pick up the phone or do some cold emailing, and you can get some business and get things going. Plus, I got back into doing affiliate marketing and started publishing ebooks on Amazon, Kindle ebooks, and gradually, bit by bit, it all started coming back together again.
You've had quite a winding road. And you mentioned, at the top of the show, it's living in Thailand, right?
Right now, yeah. I moved to Thailand in 2014. And it's, as you probably know, it's the home of the digital nomad here. There are literally thousands of people living here. It's a great community, really good communities here in Bangkok and in Chiang Mai. And in fact, wherever you go around Thailand, you meet digital nomads and so many interesting people with fascinating businesses, making money, doing things that you never thought could be a business. So it's a very interesting culture, a very good place to be.
What do you feel like is kind of the biggest challenge facing digital nomads today? Because I myself am also fully convinced, I work remotely, so I have the flexibility of traveling. But in the back of my mind, there's always this kind of fear of like, oh my God, I'm not going to be as productive while I'm traveling, or I'm not going to have the same access to internet that's as fast as where I am today. What do you feel like is the biggest challenge?
So internet access can sometimes be an issue. Usually it's pretty good. Nowadays you can go most places in the world and you can get online without any problems. But occasionally you get to a hotel and you find that the internet is not as good as you like, and then you have to go out and try and find a cafe with better internet, something like that. So that can be a little bit of a challenge, but really, it's not a big problem. It's so much easier now that when I did my first digital nomad trip back in 1999, there was no Wi-Fi, there were no mobile phones, no SIM cards. Or at least most people didn't use mobile phones. So the way I got online, we took a trip to Ireland, and I had my laptop, a big clunky laptop, like the size of a suitcase, and I would just go up and knock on people's doors at random and ask them if I could use the internet for half an hour if I paid them 10 Irish pounds, as it was in those days. And wow. some people would say, yeah, okay, that's all right. And I'd get online for an hour or so and check my email and do what I needed to do and then move on. So there's always ways around it.
Yeah, nothing that can't be solved with a little creativity.
No, that's right, yeah. So by comparison, it's so easy today now. You've got Wi-Fi just everywhere, and co-working spaces all over the place. It's not a problem anymore.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming more viable. So Rob, tell us about what your business kind of encompasses today. What are you working on?
So right now I'm doing some kind of coaching and mentoring, really to help people do the same as I do, which that's something that happened by accident. The people sort of ask me, what do you do? And they say, well, that sounds really interesting, but how do you do it? And it never occurred to me to do any kind of coaching or mentoring, but people asked me numerous times, and I thought, well, okay, maybe this is what I should be doing. So for the last year or two, that's been a kind of growing part of my business.
I love it. So on that note, I wanted to ask you a few of my frequently asked questions, which I designed to be intentionally short on my end, but your responses do not need to be equally so.
Okay.
What is your number one piece of advice for those listening today that want to build an online business for themselves? What should their number one focus be?
Just to get started and just do it. I think this is the best time ever to start a business, especially an online business. Like as I said earlier, we've got all these fantastic tools, so much information. There's a huge amount of opportunity. And the most important thing is to do it. I talk to a lot of people who say, I would like to do this, but they're afraid to take that first step. They're afraid of giving up security of a monthly salary. And I would say at least as a side hustle. You can start a blog as a side hustle, no problem at all. Just do it, dip your toe in the water and see if it works out.
I love that advice. And I know it can seem kind of intimidating, even when you are starting something on the side, to kind of like dive into this unknown water. You don't know how deep the ocean's going to be, right? It can take a lot of time. It can be costly as far as time and financial investments to like kind of like learn your way into a business. So what kind of advice would you give as far as like first steps? Let's say someone who wants to start a blog and kind of focus on generating income from a website of their own. What's the kind of the first most important step when you do decide, all right, I'm convinced, I want to get started, but I don't know what to do?
Yeah, so I think the key thing is having some quality content. You need to have your own perspective. You need to figure out what you have to offer, what makes you unique, what you have of value to bring to the world. And once you figure that out, you just deliver quality content, quality products. And the way everything is changing is the emphasis is very much on quality. Like if you look at search engines, like Google, obviously, Google is always looking for the best piece of content for a particular query. So as with your blog posts, you do these fantastic in-depth blog posts, and as a result, you are absolutely killing it on Google, and quite rightly too. And the same with social media, it's the great content that gets shared. So even maybe 10 years ago, you could fake it, you could have a dodgy product and you could still make money, but I don't think that's really possible or not very easy today. You're much better off going for creating something really useful, really valuable, and you're probably going to succeed.
Yeah, I love that. And to kind of like tack onto that, I know something that you've done as well is creating these products, offering this kind of coaching with people, right? So you don't go out and you create this online course in your own silo. You actually work with the people who are going to be going through this content and help them and incorporate your learnings as you work with them into what that product becomes.
Yeah, I find it really interesting helping people kind of change their lives, so to give up their kind of rotten day job and have the freedom to move anywhere they want to in the world and live the life of their dreams. And it's really possible now. I mean, that wasn't possible, say, 30 years ago. But now you can. You can create that lifestyle. You can pursue your passion, live where you want, live how you want, and just build life exactly the way you want it.
I love it. All right, well, Rob, this is my last question for you. What would you say has been the best investment you've ever made in the context of growing your business? And this can be in the form of time, money, tools, products, services, or otherwise.
All right, I can tell you my best investment was a £1 bus ticket. And so one British pound, so that's about $1.50. And this is back when I started my first side hustle business. I was looking for my first client, and I cold called a few companies, and one of them said, yeah, okay, we might be interested. Why don't you come around and talk to us? But they were a few miles from where I lived, so I had to go on the bus, and we'd been £1 each way on the bus, but I only had £1. So if I went, I knew I'd have to walk home afterwards. So I was in two minds whether I should go, but I decided to go, and I spent my pound, went to the meeting, and they gave me some work one day a week, and that's what started me on my side hustle career. And that in turn led to me becoming a writer, which led to me starting an online business and becoming a digital nomad and everything else that's happened since. So just about everything that's happened over the last 30 years goes back to investing £1 in that bus ticket. So I think that just shows you have to grab every opportunity that comes along, because you never know where the journey is going to take you.
That is beautiful advice to wrap this up with. Rob, thank you for joining us. Can you tell everyone listening today where they can go to learn more about you and everything else you're up to?
You can go to gofreelance.com and find out more. And if you want to get in touch with me, just go find the contact form and send me an email, and I'll be happy to talk to anyone.
Awesome. All right. Well, Rob, thank you again for joining us.
Thanks very much, Ryan. It's really great to be on the show.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Side Hustle Project, I would love your support. Head on over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating. And as always, you can catch every episode of the Side Hustle Project on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for tuning in.